The Radio Today programme with Audioboom.
Thanks for joining us. This week we are delighted to be in New Broadcasting House. I'm Trevor Dann and we're going to talk to a legend of BBC broadcasting. It's Torrin Douglas. Torrin, how are you?
I'm very well. I feel totally legendary after that introduction. Thank you, Trevor.
Torrin, you're about to leave the BBC, which is a bad thing. I think lots of us who have relied on your broadcasting and your reporting about radio and television for the last 20 years, are really disappointed to see you go. So why are you going?
Well, I'm delighted to see that you're disappointed. It would be a shame if everybody said, oh, thank God he's finally gone. Basically, it's time to get off the treadmill. As you know, a BBC correspondent is on call 24/7 if the story is big enough. And as you know, the BBC keeps coming up with stories to keep the media correspondent occupied. The last 6 months have been particularly busy, but actually those didn't influence my decision. I've been thinking about this for a while. There are other things I want to do. I want to speak, to write, look back over 40 years, in fact, since I've been covering media, both for LBC, for The Times, for the BBC, The Independent. So I just want to take stock a bit, work a bit less hard, but certainly I'm not giving up the media.
When we first met, it was the height of Burtism, wasn't it? And in fact, you used to report about me. How has the BBC changed since that period?
Well, that was a huge period of turmoil within the BBC. He made the BBC do things it didn't want to do, but actually needed to do. He modernised the BBC, and though an awful lot of people didn't welcome it, things he did like bringing all the news together, the news and current affairs used to be separate, and it used to be separate on both radio and television. So he knocked together four different departments who competed with each other and all spent money. And by doing that, he was able to raise the money for the BBC to have television correspondents all over the world, which it just didn't have before. He also spotted the internet a long time before other people, the significance of it. So he did very good things. He also made things overcomplicated. So we all remember the example under Producer Choice where if you wanted to use a CD, it cost more to get it out of the library than to go down the road and buy it. So it was an interesting in time. But I mean, when I joined the BBC, nothing was digital. We were still cutting tape with razor blades. It was a very, very different world. There was no 24-hour news. We had no Five Live. So my main outlets were the Today programme, World at 1 p.m. On Radio 4 and a bit for Radio 2 bulletins. So life has totally changed.
I saw an interview with you recently where you said that you thought the morale at the BBC was poor. And the suggestion was that it was worse than it was when you came. I have to say that 20 years ago, when you arrived, it was pretty bad then. You know, how much worse can it get?
I think that was the implication because they put that in the headline. That was not, I certainly said those words, the morale on the BBC is not good. It would be surprising if it were, given what the BBC has been through in the past 6 months, losing a director general, huge great crises over Newsnight twice and so on, strikes. So, yes, but I'm not suggesting this is new, and I'm one of those people like you who says morale is never good at the BBC. It was briefly good under Greg Dyke, ironically, and that was partly because he spent a lot of money, which he admitted in his autobiography, the licence fee settlement that John Burt had produced. He said he spent most of the money in the first couple of years. He took on 4,000 extra staff, knowing that he could, he said, work it out and how you get it back later or how you make the savings. But of course, he'd gone by the time the savings had to be made. Mark Thompson came in, had to make those savings. They were even bigger than he would have had to make. So morale at the BBC is never good. But people look back at Greg Dyke's time and think, well, that was a golden age. Except that I was looking today, we've just had this bullying report in the BBC. And I've just been saying, and you'll remember this, nothing new under the sun. People were talking about the BAFTA bullies, the people who was so important as producers and editors that you couldn't challenge them, just like you couldn't challenge the celebrities and the big presenters. And in 2003, I found it, a broadcast headline about the BAFTA bullies and Greg Dyke saying, "We will stamp this out." And that was 10 years ago. So these things do come round.
What do you think, though, about the change in the profile, the status of the corporation outside of in-house? I mean, reporting BBC stories when you're part of the BBC is an issue, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But How do you think the people outside who you're broadcasting to perceive the corporation?
Well, there's a total dichotomy here between the newspapers and what they print and what their readers think about BBC programmes. And by and large, the BBC has been having a very good time in terms of programmes, in terms of audiences, winning awards. That's on radio, on television and online. And if you talk to most listeners and viewers, they basically think the BBC is doing a pretty good job. There are things they don't, there are programmes they don't like and so on. Then you have all the stories about how much the BBC pays its top managers, bullying, crises, and it's almost as though they're different organisations, and the BBC manages to produce these great programmes in spite of having these problems. And that is the amazing thing about the BBC. I mean, I'm a great BBC fan, will remain so when I leave. If you looked at the BBC in September after the Olympics, the Telegraph and the Mail, everybody was saying, what a wonderful job. And then within 2 weeks, it was suddenly looking disaster in the face. And that's obviously not good and is obviously a fault within the corporation. But the fact that it's still attracting audiences and doing all the good things it does do is what we have to keep hold of.
So how easy is it to report on the BBC when you are part of it? I mean, people, I'm sure, accuse you, probably wrongly, in my view, of being a spokesman of management. On the other hand, there must be people within management at the BBC who say, Torrin, give us a break.
That is absolutely true. I mean, because I've been doing it for so long, I'm now used to this, it's part of the job. So as long as you're accurate and balanced and reporting without fear or favour, that's all you can do. And as you say, some people will think you've gone too hard, some people will think you've gone too soft, and on occasions we don't get it right. But I think by and large, people would accept that the BBC reports its own affairs pretty well. If you go back to the days of the Hutton Inquiry, when that was on day after day, the BBC reported that fairly. It reported the report itself fairly. It didn't try and use its airwaves to argue its case. And that's absolutely right, because it's publicly funded and publicly accountable. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it's something that the BBC should certainly aspire to.
It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. We'll talk more with Torrin Douglas, the about-to-depart media correspondent of the BBC, after the news this week from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
So, the final results on the Competition Commission's investigation into the takeover of GMG Radio by Global Radio are out. And they're exactly the same as the provisional findings back in February. But there are a couple of changes if you happen to read the entire 139-page report. One of them now says the Competition Commission will be happy for Global Radio to license its brands to the purchasers of any licenses it has to sell. This is an important addition, as consultant Paul Easton explains.
The thing that actually intrigues me is that in the original remedies, it suggested that entering into brand licensing or warehousing type agreements would not be acceptable. It would have to be a clean break. It now seems the Competition Commission have changed their mind, and they've now decided that it would be possible to maybe Global to sell one of their brands and then license it back.
It now means Global Radio can sell the only station which is common to all affected areas as one job lot, Capital, offloading this license to another company and then providing programming, marketing and national sales whilst keeping the on-air name seems to be the obvious answer. Now, the only question on everybody's lips is who will be the buyer and what will happen in North Wales? This is where it gets silly, though, because if Real is sold, they'll still have a Heart. But if Heart is sold, they'll want to turn Real into Heart. But they might not be able to because Heart is already there and owned by somebody else who will either run it as a franchise or rename it. But then can you rename a radio station to something that recently existed in the marketplace? Very confusing. Whatever happens, the situation is bound to last another few months before we have any more information on the future ownership structure of the UK's largest radio group and, of course, the future of the industry going forward. And we'll be there every step of the way to explain more. That's all for this week from Radio Today. Without a single mention of Jockfest, I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
At londonvoiceover.co.uk, L is for life story. We won't give you an uber long life story. We just brew the coffee and get on with it. I'm Alex Ashby, and I'm a London voiceover. Find out more about me at londonvoiceover.co.uk.
We're back in New Broadcasting House with Torrin Douglas, who's got, what, 3 weeks more to go?
3 or 4 weeks to go, that's okay. Right. Yes, I think it will go very, very quickly.
Let's talk about BBC Radio specifically. And, of course, we've had to call it BBC Audio and Music for a while, but it's back to being BBC Radio. How do you think BBC Radio is going to develop in the next few years?
It's very hard to say. All I do know is that radio has coped remarkably well with all the changes that have gone on. People were writing off radio years ago. There were times when John Burt, who we mentioned, was in control at the BBC, and people were saying the BBC's share of the radio market will go down to a third and so on. That has absolutely not happened. And so the BBC's share of the audience, but also the quality of much of BBC radio, has remained as high as ever. So it will adapt. It's adapting to new media and all of the changes that are going on, social media, the new technology. But I'm confident that BBC Radio will remain very strong. And what I would like to see is commercial radio being stronger than it is. We've got an organisation called the Broadcasting Press Guild, which is the journalists who write about broadcasting. And we have been constantly saying we've got to do something to try and reward the good commercial radio programmes that are out there. But even with that intent in mind, it is still quite difficult to do. I don't sit on that radio jury, but it was one of the things that they were looking at, and they wrote a blog on Huffington Post saying, we hope we will do that.
Is it good for BBC Radio that Helen Bowden, formerly head of BBC News, and some would say edged out of that job because of the post-Savile upshot, is now running it. Is that a good thing?
I think it is a good thing, but I agree that in PR terms, it doesn't look good. And I'm afraid that is just one of the consequences of that whole awful period last year. Helen had hoped to be Director General, went for the job, didn't get it. I think, had I been advising her, having done 8 years as Director of News, nobody should be doing that job for much longer. She knows radio inside out. She was a great controller of Radio 4. She has described it as her first love. If she had gone straight in and said, I'm going back to my first love, what a brilliant job, having done 8 years in charge of journalism, I think it would have been better for her and for radio. But that's all in the past.
She looks kind of reluctant to take it on.
That is the danger. I'm not sure that she is. And I'm sure once she gets her feet under the desk, she will absolutely embrace it. Nobody said when Jenny Abramsky was running this department that it wasn't a proper big job. It's a huge job. And BBC Radio, many would say, is actually the heart of the BBC.
So here we are with radios 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc., at a time when the BBC was meant to be delivering quality first, i.e. cutting back. Are the BBC right to be going ahead with all the services they are, or should they be letting some go to commercial radio?
That is one of the big questions, and it's something that we're looking to see what Tony Hall, the new Director General, and James Purnell, his strategy advisor, his head of strategy, is going to come up with, because certainly the impression was given that Mark Thompson felt he could not cut anything. Some people then said, so you're down to salami slicing. As the BBC goes into its new charter and its new licence fee negotiations, it must take those big decisions. When you say let them go to commercial radio, I'm not sure what you mean. What is there to sell? People have talked about privatising Radio 1 for years. What is there to privatise? Is it the brand? Is it the studios? Is it the presenters? It's not as easy as it looks. And the fact that a station gets a huge audience when it's part of the BBC family and machine and has all the BBC marketing behind it, does not mean it will automatically work in commercial radio.
People will say, well, of course he would say that, wouldn't he? Because he's the BBC's media correspondent.
I was saying this before I ever joined the BBC. This argument is so old. When I was at LBC, I was saying the same things. What is there to sell? How do you privatise it? And then...
So if I'm Global Radio, I think, well, let's have Radio 2. Just privatise it then. Mm. But of course... It wouldn't be Radio 2, would it, if they ran it?
It wouldn't. Well, would it keep the name? Because if it's no longer BBC, there's a gap. So you've got BBC Radio 1.
It wouldn't have that kind of programming either, would it?
Well, that is the problem. I mean, how do you privatise and then keep what there is? Because actually, what is absolutely clear is commercial radio, for good or ill, could not afford to pay the costs that the BBC is paying out of the licence fee. And that has been a legitimate gripe that the commercial radio stations have had. But on the other hand, if you're a radio listener, why would you knock it? The fact that the BBC, through the licence fee, is able to invest in all these wonderful programmes. Yes, that is very unfortunate for the rivals who want to make money and also win an audience. But actually, for the listener, is it a bad thing?
So I could see you in the future doing consultancy for Radio Centre, Torin. But what actually are your plans for the next few years?
I'm hoping to... Consultancy is not really part of it, but what I want to do is speak and write and chair events. So I will be able to put these views across in ways that people ask me to do so. I'm not planning to broadcast very much, though if people come to me with a broadcasting idea, I'm not going to knock it. But I've been covering the media for 40 years. It's a good chance to stand back and look at some of these issues that come round again and say, actually, there is not much new under the sun. So I'm available for anybody to come up with offers. But speaking and writing and chairing events. And also there's an organisation called the Media Trust, which brings the media and charities together. And I've worked with them in the past and I hope to do more with them.
He is Torin Douglas at AOL.com. Can I say that?
You certainly may. Thank you very much.
And if you would like to book him for something, he may be available shortly. Torin, thank you so much. This has been the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. He was Torin Douglas and we'll be back next week.
The Radio Today programme is a TDC production.